Thursday, the 3rd of September, Yud Dalev Elul, Rabbi Yehoshua Posen, the series of Halacha in the Workplace, Part 5, Ribis, Heta Iska, Part D.
Morning, Yeshus of Iskeni. When Rabbi Kivagim was Rav, there was someone in the town who was Malva the Ribis, who used to lend and charge other Yidden Ribis. And when his time came and he was Nifta, his sons and his family went to the Chevra Kadisha in order to buy him a plot, and sort out Masada the Kvura. And the Chevra Kadisha asked for an exorbitant amount of money, a fortune much more than the normal standard going rate was. So the family felt this wasn't fair, this was Avlo, what was going on, so they went to the Rav, they went to Rebbe Kivagim, and they explained their problem. There's a standard rate that the Chevra Kadisha normally charge, and here the Chevra Kadisha are charging them for their father so much more. It's unfair, it's not right, and the Rav should put it right. And to their surprise, Rebbe Kivagim turned around and he said, you should know it's 100% right. Why? He said that the average person, the average member of Klal Yisrael, when he buys a keva, he's buying a keva for a limited period of time. Mitzvah Hashem, we all believe in Tzchias HaMeisim. We all know that we're only being put into the ground for a restricted amount of time. We hope that Tzchias HaMeisim will come sooner rather than later. And that's it. We won't need the plot anymore, and the people who own the land can do with it as they will. So to speak, it's what we would call a short-term lease. However, your father was Malva Beribis. We learned in the last year, a person's Malva Beribis doesn't get a chilek it's not part of Tzchias HaMeisim. So you're coming, it's a completely different story. You want to buy the land, You want to buy it forever, but Shesach, it's going to cost much more. This is how Kivega Paskin, the Aloch HaMeisim. We've spent already a couple of shrooms going over the different possibilities and the severity of Ribis, and I'd like to spend the short amount of time we have today going through the klolim of Heta Iska. Heta Iska, we've mentioned a number of times. There's quite a lot of misunderstanding about what it is, how it works, when it works, and when it doesn't work. And hopefully today we'll manage to get through the main Rosh HaProkim of exactly what Heta Iska is. We've mentioned once before in the Sheh, just over a year ago, some of the Protim, and those of you who remember it from then will give us a little bit of grace. First of all, why do you need a Heta Iska? So the basic understanding that we all have to have, which hopefully has come out from the last room already, is there's a fundamental difference between a loan and an investment. If I lend a person an amount of money, and I know that I want back the money, and I want back 15%, so that's a loan. I give them the money, I fix the percentage, nothing can happen short of the person going chas v'shalom bankrupt. Nothing can happen, I don't mean that as a head start, let's rephrase that. Nothing can happen short of the person losing all his money. That will mean that I won't get back not only my care, not only the capital which I've given him, but also the interest. Klal Yisrael are not allowed to lend each other to Malvah Beribis, to lend each other with interest. What is an investment? An investment is where I put a certain amount of money, I invest it into the investment, and I hope to receive a certain return. And if I've got good mazel, then I'll get a larger return, otherwise a smaller return, and there's a possibility that not only might I not receive a return at all, but I could even potentially lose my capital. If the entire investment collapses, I could theoretically lose my capital. That is the main difference between an investment and a loan. Now the problem is that, as Eden, we're not allowed to be Malva Beribis, but most of us would like to try and ensure as much as we can that not only is our capital as secure as we can make it, but would even like to have a certain kind of assurance that we're going to get a return on our money. So this is where Heta Iska really comes along. To understand Heta Iska, we first have to understand what is an Iska. What is an Iska? Now an Iska is brought down already in the Gemara. Ha Iska, Palga Milva, Palga Pekodim. Gemara in Babylon, Tzir, Daf Kufayim, and Beis. Now Toi tells us an Iska, a standard Iska, where two people enter into an arrangement, whereby there's an investing partner, and there's a managing partner. The managing partner, let's say, doesn't put in any money. He manages the company. An investing partner comes along, and he injects the capital. So let's take a standard scenario. A person comes along. Reuben comes along, and he puts £100,000 into the company. Shimon is the one who's going to manage and run the whole company. Says the Gemara Minastam, if they don't say a word about how they're splitting up this arrangement, we say it's Palga Milva or Palga Bikodin. What that means is, that £50,000 of Rune's £100,000 is being invested into the company. That is his shareholding in the company, that's his investment. The second £50,000 of Reuven's is not Reuven's at all. He's lending that to Shimon, which subsequently Shimon invests back into the company. So the actual amount of money that's been invested into this company is £100,000. Half of it's been invested by Reuven, half of it's been invested by Shimon, which he happened to get. Where did he get the money from? He borrowed it from Reuven. Therefore, they split the profits, the 50-50 shareholders, they split the profits 50-50. There's a little bit of a problem. Since Reuven has put in all the money, so to speak, he's lent Shimon half and he's put in half, but he's not doing any work. And Shimon is doing all the work, so even though in a business perspective we understand this arrangement very well, but halakhically there's a problem, because why is Shimon doing the work on the half of Reuven's investment? Half the money is Shimon's, 50,000 is Shimon's, he borrowed it from Reuven. But the other 50,000, which belongs to Reuven, his shareholding in the company, is being worked on by Shimon. Reuven's not doing anything. He's invested the money and he goes off and does whatever he does for a living. Shimon's doing the work every day, 9 to 5, he's working on Reuven's investment. Chazal say, why is he working on Reuven's investment? You know why? Because Reuven lent him £50,000. That's the problem of Ribbis. So Mele Chazal say you have one of two options, the second of which will be more appealing. The first option is that you have to give Shimon a larger percentage than his 50% shareholding. So in other words, the 50-50 shutim, if they would come to sell the business, they'd split it equally. But when it comes to the profits, Shimon gets 60 and Reuven gets 40. So that way, Shimon is receiving extra as Sa'a Amoloi, he's getting paid for his work. The alternative way, if you don't have it as a percentage, is you can fix an amount. We're going to pay you X amount for your work. Now, interestingly enough, even though in most areas of Ribbis Chazal are very machmi on anything that might remotely smell like Ribbis, anything that might remotely look like Ribbis, when it comes to this halacha, Chazal said you can even give him a token pound for his work, if that's what's written in the Heta Iska, in the Iska, you can give right in, a pound is being given to Shimon for his work, and that's fine because you've acknowledged that he needs to get paid, he's not doing it for free. He's prepared to drop his fee to a pound, that's okay. And that is up to now, is a iska. Now, we move on to a heta iska. What's a heta iska? Now, obviously in a iska, you have the problems which we outlined before. So, Reuven's injected 50,000 as an investment, 50,000 as a loan. So, that means that if the company were to chas v'sholom go bust, he would only lose 50,000, because the second 50,000 he's lent. Right? So that he's going to get guaranteed. That money he has to get back from Shimon. But his problem is, the first 50,000, he could theoretically lose half his money. Never mind that, apart from that, he's got no guarantees whatsoever, as we explained, on his profit. Like you never do, whenever a person makes an investment, you've got no guarantees on your profit. So, the Chumash Hadeshen came up with a patent. He came up with an idea. In Shulchan Aruch, Nirdeesim Kufar and Zayin Sif Lamud, the Mechaber explains that in a regular Iska, there's nothing wrong with the partners making certain conditions. Example, let's take our Reuven and Shimon. Reuven's invested 50,000, Shimon's invested his 50,000. Reuven's allowed to make a condition at the beginning of the arrangement and saying, listen here, I'm very happy to inject my money, you inject your money, but I only want it to go to this specific investment which we've discussed. We've seen a nice property. I want it to go to this property. I don't want you taking my 50,000, your 50,000, and blowing it on something else, and then turning around afterwards and saying, listen, I'm really sorry, the investment went belly up. I want to know where my money is going. I want it for this investment. So then, the halacha is, if Shimon takes the money and uses it for a different investment, if there's profit, no problem, Reuven's very happy to collect. If there isn't profit, or even the capital is lost, then Reuven can turn around and say, excuse me, if the capital is lost, Reuven can turn around and say, excuse me, I was very clear why I was giving you this money. It was meant to go to this specific investment. You didn't put it in this investment. You have to pay out from your pocket to replace my capital. So that's an example brought out in Shulchan Aruch. Based on this, comes along the Chumash Hadeshen. He says, you know, I've got a very good idea. We have a few times in Shas and Shulchan Aruch, different situations where a person, in order to be believed, has to make a shur. Has to make a shur. We have other times where people need even more shur. They need edim. comes on with Shimon Sadesh and he says like this. Really, if Shimon turns around and he says, I'm really sorry, but the whole investment's gone belly up, he'd be believed. He'd be believed that's an arrangement between the partners. But here, in a Heta Iska, what happens is, Reuven tells Shimon, I'm investing with you £50,000, but I want you to know, if you turn around and tell me that my £50,000 was lost, I will not believe you until you bring two Edim who can testify that this is what happened. And if you're not interested in this tonight, then don't take the money. I'm only investing with you, Adas King. So now already, the situation's already somewhat better. Because chances are, even if the investment does go belly up, is Shimon really going to have Edim who can be made that the investment went sour? And therefore, if he can't, what does it say in the contract? If you don't bring me Edim, I'm not prepared to believe you, and therefore you're going to have to pay me back my capital. That was the Shimon Sadeshan's idea. Over the years, this idea has been refined somewhat, because there were times when, unfortunately, the Shimons of the world were producing false Edim to give Edus that things have gone bad. So therefore, nowadays we write that the Edim have to be kosher, Edim Alpidin Teru. So in other words, this makes the likelihood of it happening somewhat less as well, because Moshul, any Goyim and any women who might have any knowledge about it, but since they're not kosher, Edim Alpidin Teru, won't be admissible to give Edus, and therefore the Shimon, the person who is the managing partner, is more likely than not going to have to pay. It's worth just slipping in that Chochmas Sodom and Ginas Rodom explain that these clauses which we said partners can put in an Iska is only talking about clauses which are viable, things which are reasonable. You can't put in an outrageous clause that basically means you're guaranteed to get back your money. It has to be something which makes sense, which partners could put in an arrangement. So therefore we put in that you have to have Edim. Along comes the Levush, and the Levush brought down the Kuntras Asma, took this one step further. They said, not only can you do that on the capital, you can even do that on the profit. You can put in a clause and say like this, we've made a cheshbon that this investment is going to make a return of, let's say, 15%. We've assumed that's the return it's going to make. We've looked at all the figures, we've sorted out, it should be 15%. If you want to turn around now, at the end of the year, and tell me, no, this year, sorry, we only made 5%, I will not believe you. Now, at the time of Levush, some people wanted to say the same thing, I won't believe you unless you bring Edim. This Levush wasn't happy with. To require Edim for such a thing is kemat, guaranteeing that it's not going to happen, it's not fair. So Levush said, you say, what you're putting in is then, you'll have to make a shur. You have to make a shur. I'm not mechuyav to believe you, Stam. I'm sure nowadays this has become more apparent. You have people who invest in companies, they invest in certain businesses, and the managing partner turns around and says, I'm really sorry, we didn't make any money this year. It's very easy to say, because plenty of places aren't making money this year. And the investing partner, he's got his suspicions, you know. Did it really not make any money this year? Maybe it made a bit of money. So here, what we put at the outset of this arrangement, you put in a clause saying, I will not believe you unless you make you sure. And like with the first clause, this clause has been refined, and now it's been changed to a shur deiraisa, which means a shur na sefer Torah, which is an extremely severe thing. There are even some poskim that say you're allowed to put in shur deiraisa on a sefer Torah in the bimah in shul. You have to stand up in shul and holding a sefer Torah say, I swear that this business did not make the 15% this year. Anything short of that, you have to pay me the 15%. Now we put in as well, if you pay me the 15%, then I'm prepared to be moichel any potential profit that might have made more than that. In other words, you pay me the 15%, I'm happy with that, that's what we think you should have made, and then I'm fine, I'm on the picture. Pardon? But he could theoretically get up and make a shur. But if Ramayis, he would get up and make a shur derayis the chamor and a sefer Torah, then he wouldn't have to pay. Right? That's written in the clause, so he does have, so to speak, that option. What percentage is one allowed to put into this Heta Iska? Now this is a very important halacha. See, some people think that Heta Iska is, you know, it's a Heta, you start off with your Heta Iska and now everything's mutter, right? So as long as we have this piece of paper, we don't need to daiga about what's on it. That's not the case. Rav Moshe, in Igros Moshe Yudei Chelik Beis, Simon Samach Beis explains that the amount that's fixed has to be an amount that's acceptable. It has to be an amount that's reasonable. So therefore, if you look at this investment, £100,000, now, we mustn't forget for a minute, when you say 15% on £100,000, what you're really saying is that you expect a rate of return of 30%. Why? Because only £50,000 is Reuven's investment. He's given over £100,000, but we've said half of it's a loan and half of it's an investment. So when he wants 15% back on his £100,000, what he's really saying is, I projected the potential profit of this business is to make 30% a year. Right? Now that already changes things somewhat. So, but etzem, we've said that we don't really allow, most will not allow in a regular heter iska, which is palga milva, palga bikodin, more than 15% on a long-term heter iska. Some short-term heter iskas might be a bit easier, like short-term loans, you get charged high interest. Sometimes in a short period of time you can make more money on a quick buy and sell. But on a long-term investment, we don't allow in a regular heter iska more than around 15%. And that's because what we're saying is, nowadays it's hard to even believe 15%, what you're saying is that it's acceptable to assume that when Reuven gets up and says, I don't believe you that my business, this investment, didn't make 30%. Right, 30%, I'm sure it all be chalashin nowadays to have things we could put our money in that would make a 30% return. But Rabbonim, so 30%, which is 15% on a regular heter iska, is the most that we'll allow. However, there is a type of heter iska called kule pikodin. Kule pikodin means, instead of saying the 100,000 that I've given over is palgam over palga pikodin, half of it's an investment and half of it's a loan, we instead say the entire 100,000 which I'm giving over is all an investment. I want to invest the entire amount. You can do a kule pikodin. There are a few poskim who don't like such a thing, but one can do a pialocha kule pikodin. And if one does a kule pikodin, then one would be allowed to charge up to 30%. Not to use the word charge, one will be allowed to write on the heter iska up to 30%, because that's the same percentage, just the whole entire amount is an investment. What's the problem? Why doesn't everyone write kule pikodin? The problem's obvious. In the worst case scenario, that he were to be able to prove that the business went belly up, or some other scenarios which we'll see shortly, instead of losing half your money, you'll lose all your money. So the risk factor is quite a bit higher. Someone once brought me a heter iska, which he showed me has been written by one of the gedolim. He said, look, don't have to worry about this heter iska, because it's been written by a godel. He brought me the heter iska. It was written by a godel, but the godel wasn't told the percentage which was going to be written in the iska, because they hadn't yet decided. So he'd written a heter iska, which was gedasa kedim. He'd given it to this person. This person had then gone off and written an astronomical percentage in the heter iska. It reminds me of a time once I walked into a restaurant in Eretz Yisrael, and had a sign on saying, we don't have a hechsher, but all the products here that we use in this restaurant have a hechsher. I walked up to the counter. It's unbelievable. I walked up to the counter, and to my shock, I saw, yes, they had bedatz rolls with rabanut burgers and rabanut cheese on top of them. Right? See, everything was good. All the ingredients were kosher. Everything's fine. But how you put it together can also make enough gemina. If someone takes a hechsher iska, which might be kedasa kedin, but he doesn't know what figures he's meant to be putting in it, Then all things are fine. There are limitations on a heter iska. What limitations? The Shulchan Aruch Rav and the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Let's go back first to the regular heter iska. The Shulchan Aruch Rav, Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, and other poskim explain that you're only allowed to use a regular heter iska. There's another type which we'll speak about in a minute. You're only allowed to use a regular heter iska for an investment. That's what an iska is. An iska means someone is investing with you. So nowadays, when you find plenty of people, unfortunately, in situations where they need money for their day-to-day living, right? They want to pay off their mortgage, they want to have what to eat, they want to marry off their children, and they go to a friend who's prepared to, so to speak, lend them money, but he obviously needs some return on his money, he's maybe even taking it out from his bank accounts, he's making a loss, so with all the justifications that come with it, so he's going to write a percentage in there. If that money is not being invested, then where's the heter iska? There's no investment here. I know it's not being invested. He's going shopping with my money. In such a case, in a regular heter iska, it's not allowed. One cannot use a regular heter iska for such a thing. In fact, I think we mentioned this a year ago, the times of the Shulchan Aruch Rav, he said to use a heter iska to buy property. If the property is going to be rented out, no problem, it's an investment. But a person wants to buy a house, he wants to buy a house for himself. So what does he do? He writes a heter iska. He borrows money from a friend, he uses the money to buy a house, he writes a heter iska. But he's living in the house, so where's the return on the house? So in the days of Shulchan Aruch Rav, Shulchan Aruch Rav wrote, you're not allowed to use a heter iska for such a thing. Comes along his grandson, And he says, in the Kuntras Achron, he says that you should know in the times of my father, which was in the 1700s, in those days real estate was stagnant. It never went up or down in price. That was the price, and that's what it is. So for Shleitzach, you can't use money, you can't take money which you can use to buy a property, which is going to be worth exactly the same amount in 5 years' time, and you're going to be living in that property. So where's the Iska? You might have got the same problem. There's no Iska. However, says the Kuntras Achron, but nowadays already, from the times of his grandfather, things have changed. Property itself is seen as an investment, and therefore, even if a person's going to live in the house, but the house itself is an investment, you're buying the property, and hopefully the property is going to go up in value. I don't know if nowadays we've gone back in time, back to the days of the Shulchan Aruch, Kem and Klem. Agabonim, we have another problem here. The problem is like this. The Chazanish says, it's a very important halacha, the Chazanish says, one cannot use a Heter Iska if one knows himself, if Reuven, the investing partner, knows what's going on with the investment. Right? Let's take the house. If I know that a person's bought the house, relying on what we said, the Kuntras Achron, he's going to live in the house, so what's the investment? The investment is that the property is going to go up in value. So let's say a Shreya wants to lend money to his Eidim. So he gives the money to his Eidim, he writes a Heter Iska, he writes the whatever, 10%, 15%, whatever it is. Right? And he knows where his son-in-law lives, and he knows what the house is worth, and he knows it hasn't gone up in value, or even if it's gone up in value, it hasn't gone up in value at the rate of 15%, which is 30%, right? So then you have a very real problem. Because the whole way that Heter Iska works, again, Heter Iska isn't magic, it's an arrangement. What's the arrangement? I don't believe you that it didn't make 30%, so therefore if you can't prove it to me with Eidim, or by making sure, then you have to pay up. But what right does Reuven have to stand there and say, I don't believe you, when he knows exactly what's going on, he knows as a fact that it hasn't gone up, he knows that this percentage hasn't been made. In such a case, Pasen's the Chazanish, Pasen's Rav Moshe, Igus Moshe, in Yeretzeche, the Beisim, the Sum of Beis, also Pasen's that you cannot use a Heter Iska for something where you know what's going on. If you know what the matzav is with the Isik, then you've got no right to ask for the money. And not only that, if one does use a Heter Iska for such a thing, they are of the opinion that if you know that it's, let's say, gone down in value, property prices have slumped, you could even lose part of your capital. Because you know, you can't turn around and say, I don't believe you that my capital hasn't stayed the same. You know yourself what's happened to the capital. Now, this is obviously a big problem. So what does one do about Heter Iska in these cases? There's another type of Heter Iska. The second type of Heter Iska is not that I'm investing with Reuven. Reuven's investing with Shimon on a specific investment. This second type of Heter Iska is where Reuven is buying into Shimon's investments. In other words, if Shimon, apart from this house, has other investments, he works and he's got other things and he's got shares, he's got whatever it might be, other investments himself. So I'm not investing, Reuven is not turning around and saying, I'm investing with you on X. He's, so to speak, buying a shareholding in Shimon's assets. Shimon has different investments going on, which are going up, which are going down. And of those other investments, Reuven has no idea about. So therefore, he'd be entitled to say, I don't believe you. So Reuven writes, says to Shimon, I'm buying into all your investments, and I won't believe you that they haven't made a profit of anything less than 15%, unless you make a shuwa. Now this Heter Iska, because what it is, by definition, what you're doing is you're buying into his assets. First of all, that has to be written in the Heter Iska, that it's a different type. Second of all, you have to do a kinyan, because it's not just terms of an investment. You are actually being kona, you're buying into his investment. Not all of those investments necessarily are going to be kona with the mois. So therefore, the time you do a kinyan sudu. The mile is that in such a case, once Shimon has received the money, he can do it the way he likes. He can go shopping. Because he wasn't given this money to invest. He was selling a shareholding in his investments to Reuven, and then with the money he can do it as he wants. Does a Heter Iska have to be written? Right? Now, when a loan is a verbal loan, it's a milva al peh, and there's no contract at all, then the halach is one does not have to actually write a Heter Iska. Well, I can say, I'm giving you this money, you're meant to give me a certain return, and the terms and conditions are, according to the terms and conditions of a Heter Iska, whereby, if you give me a certain percentage, then I'll believe you, otherwise you have to make a shura with Eidim, etc. However, even on a verbal loan, it's preferable that a written Heter Iska should be used. And the reason is that this whole concept of Heter Iska, some might say, is a little bit of a farce. Right? At the end of the day, what's the bottom line? The bottom line is, I want to be malva beribus, the Torah tells me I can't be malva brewers. Great, so Chazal have come up with a shtar that for all intents and purposes allows me to be malva brewers. No, that's not what's happening. It's not malva brewers, it's an investment with terms and conditions. And if those terms and conditions were to be met, for example at the Chaznish, if you yourself would now have first-hand knowledge that the investment went bad, you would not be entitled to your money. It's not the same as malva brewers, but nevertheless, in order that both parties realize that what they're doing is not just magic, they're signing themselves onto a proper contract that is binding, so it's definitely preferable that Hetzer Iskah should be signed. Furthermore, the Kitzur Chlorach brings down that in a case where the loan, with the terms of the loan, are on a contract, and there's just a verbal Hetzer Iskah, that's no good. Why? Because the person could take the loan, which says in it, you owe me X, and you're meant to pay me X amount of interest, you can go to court, and you get the money. So the fact that there's a verbally, what are you going to do? You're going to stand there in court and say, yeah, but verbally he said that it's according to Hetzer Iskah, a laugh you have court. So therefore in such a case, says the Kitzur Chlorach, if it's a written agreement, then you have to say in the agreement, it's been done al-pi Hetzer Iskah. Now, there is sometimes a little bit of a vibe that I pick up during the issue, not necessarily here, wherever it might be, that business can come away with a little bit of a feeling of Chas Shalom, you see the hassle, quote unquote, you see the hassle one has to go through when one deals with Yidden, you know, it's so complicated, one has to write the Hetzer Iskah, and you have to do this, and how are you going to do the Hetzer Iskah, and the terms and conditions, and then, you know, there's problems with Geneva, and Geneva's not allowed, which isn't by going either, and there's problems of Tos, and there's all, you know, it gets so, life gets so complicated when one deals with Yidden. Let me just tell you a story that happened with the Chasam Sofer. At the time of the Chasam Sofer, there was a Yid who was very wealthy and he lost his money. Unfortunately, he lost his money and he tried to pick himself up again and he devised a plan, but for this plan he had to get to the trade fair in Leipzig. He had to get to the fair, and when he got there he had exactly worked out what he was going to do. He was going to sell something and buy something and sell it on, and he had it all worked out. But he had one problem, he couldn't get to Leipzig. It was too expensive. He couldn't afford the travel fare to Leipzig. So he went to the Chasam Sofer and he asked the Rav. He said, no, actually the Rav has an Eitzah. I've got this plan, I want to set myself up again, you know, everything is brilliant, but I need to get there and I posh, I can't afford it, maybe the Rav has an Eitzah. So the Chasam Sofer said, he went to the cupboard and he took out the amount of money that was needed for the trip and he gave it to the gentleman, and the gentleman was over the moon. He went to Leipzig and Baruch Hashem, sure enough, his fortunes turned and he was extremely matzliach. On the way back to the Chasam Sofer, he stopped for a minute, this gentleman, and he realized, listen here, Gewaldig, my whole life has changed, and because of who? Because the Chasam Sofer, without the Chasam Sofer, I could never have done it. So what did he do? He stopped off by a jeweler there, and he bought an exquisite ring with an incredible precious stone embedded in this ring. Beautiful piece. And he decided he's going to give this to the Chasam Sofer to show his Akar Satoy for the fact that Chasam Sofer set him back up on the road. So he went, came into the Chasam Sofer, he was all excited, he had the 100 gold coins which he'd borrowed for the trip, and he gives it to Chasam Sofer, and he says to the Chasam Sofer, and I want the Rav to take this ring as a sign of my Akar Satoy, my appreciation for the tremendous chesed which the Rav did. Now, till now, everything's fine. From now is where things take a slight turn. The Chasam Sofer took this ring, and he went over to the window, and he said, wow, look at this ring. And it holds up to the light, and he holds up here, and he shows the others, and they all gather around, and says, look at this, it's gorgeous, stunning. And then he calls in a mumch and he says, I don't think there's a nicer gem than this one in the entire town. I'm telling you, this is one of its kind. So the man's so excited, look at this, wow, did I do a good pick here. That mum's just what the Rav needs, just what the Rav wants. Gewaldig. So after looking at it and admiring it for another few minutes, the Chasam Sofer stopped. And he said, such a nice ring, you have to keep it for yourself. And he gave it back to the gentleman. This is what I did. I went to all the tzuchah to buy it and to find the right one. And I come to the Rav, and I give it to him. The Rav, after making such a fast and hullabaloo about how gewaldig is, he gives it back to me. He says, I don't understand. I want the Rav to have this ring. So Chasam Sofer smiled, and he said, I'm very, very sorry. But we're Yidden, and in the Torah, it's Mefurish Issa Ribbis. It's a Ribbis. I lent you this money, Chas V'Sholem, I don't want, and I'm not allowed to take anything back in return. This money I lent for you, you paid it back to me. I've been Mekai my mitzvah, you've been Mekai your mitzvah, Prius Palchoy, and that's where it stops. You don't need to say thank you, and you definitely can't give me anything extra. Okay, so the man was upset. What can he do? He left the room. Fine. As these things go, the moment he's out of the room, what happens? The Talmidim jump up and say, Rebbe, what's going on? If you're lucky, they wait till they're out of the room. They jump up and say, Rebbe, what's going on? What's going on? You make such a fuss. The moment he walked in and handed out that ring, we were posh, you're going to say, Rebbe is not allowed. Well, you start making a noise and gewaldig and beautiful. So Chazon Sofer said, it's posh. It's posh. How often do I get a chance in Mekai and the Mitzvah of not being Malva Brubis? Not very often. I'm not a businessman. I don't have these opportunities every day. Now along comes an opportunity, and what an opportunity! I wanted to be nenef, I wanted to show my geshmak for the mitzvah. There's a reason, mitzvah. Before I appreciate the mitzvah, first I have to appreciate what it is that I'm not taking. A person wants to give me something. Don't just say, Rivis, look at it, appreciate its godless, the beauty, and then you appreciate the mitzvah which you're doing. When you say, I'm very sorry, I can't take this ring. Abayisai, those of you who deal out there in the business world have opportunities daily that come across your way, where the potential pitfalls to be malva berivus. The correct perspective, befrat, when we're holding Erev Yom Narayim, we're looking for schusim. Unfortunately, people who can't sit and learn, Yom of Valayla, in that regard, are losing out from the schusim they can get on Talmud Torah. But instead, you have opportunities of these mitzvahs which are coming away daily. The right hashkofa one should have is, wow, oh, look at this, we have a geshmak opportunity that's coming away, which be'etzem should be a problem of rivis. How are we going to sort out this problem of rivis? And any amount of time which one spends, whether it's on Heta Iska or asking Shias, whatever it might be, is vital work which we're putting in to Mekayim, the mitzvah, to make sure we're not even on the lav. And what a lav it is, lav with the ramifications which we've mentioned, Samesim, Koifa Chasashon HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When it's coming to this time of year, where many of us are prepared to spend hours making sure that we get the right esuk, that mamish looks perfect, actually we spend at least the equivalent amount of time making sure that our business dealings are kadasa kadin, and that we're doing what Kutchbohu wants from us.